Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 236th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly, half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers.
Thank you so much for coming out. A lot is going on in Sudan recently.
What you're hearing in the background is El Fadl Arpa. He's welcoming people to an event he hosted, a candlelight vigil on the 30th of July, to recognize the long, hard, and ongoing struggles of the people of Sudan. He himself was born and raised in Darfur, Sudan, but he has had harrowing escapes and an unbelievable journey. If you would like to hear his personal stories, you can listen back in the archives at newmainersspeak.com. But today, El Fadl joins me by Zoom to help explain what compels him to create candlelight vigils in honor of the struggling people of Sudan. So glad to have you. Welcome back, El Fadl.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
So I wanted to see if we could talk a little bit about your vigil that you hosted last Thursday evening. I really had the honor to attend. Thank you so much for including me in that event. It was beautiful. It was a gorgeous night in Portland. And I wondered if you could tell us what it takes to host a vigil. You didn't just call a few friends together. What all happens in order for you to have that happen?
Yeah, it's really there is a war for a long time in Sudan since 1956, in Sudan civil war, and that's why I end up in marginalized area like Darfur, Nuba Mountain, and Western Sudan Bija, and up north in Kush, and Blue Nile. And now it's expanded all regions of Sudan. It's end up genocide, ethnic cleansing, crime against humanity, and a massive rape, and also torturing people and kill a lot of people. And then we are like kind of, we have to do something, because when we hear anybody being killed, we feel like we want to do something. And that's the only thing we come out with. Let's do a condolence vigil and honor all these people whom they being murdered, and those whom they are need to be free, and just our solidarity and our support to them. Let's do a candlelight vigil. And then we start taking a step forward. We call the lady who she was there, Rebecca, teacher Rebecca. She helped us put a press release, flyer, and we work together as a team. And then we contact the authorities that we need that place, Bayside Trail, so we could host that candlelight vigil. So we get it that there, we get it done. And we work on to bring like affordable, those type of restrooms. We bring maybe, if we have some people coming from, you know, far away they want to use. So we get that done, and then we go bring like sanitizer, mask, face, you know, mask, and also like we bring the other like a water, people like when it's very hot, people need to be hydrated. And we bring the other stuff where we will need it with this COVID-19, the people at least will have that kind of social distancing. And we will be able to express ourselves to kind of respect for those great people whom they're being murdered. And also to be like a kind of a role model, doing something different, not protesting during the day. You let it when it's cool down, and also when the sun go down with all these beautiful candles. And that mean a lot to us. And that's the way how we wanna honor and also remember and also not forget we will be fighting for peace and justice and equality, and just to bring the criminal to the justice, and then Sudanese people will be free to have a freedom and to have this security and safety, and they will just be as anybody else around the world. And I'm so glad that you and other friends and supporters, they come, and we really together, we are able to light those candles and stand together and just make this evening even greater and more meaningful. And we are really appreciate you a lot and thank you a lot. And as a Mainers, we are all come together because we believe of the freedom of speech and the freedom of expression, freedom of movement, and all people around the world to be free and be in peace.
Well, it was such a beautiful night. And I think that freedom of speech was very apparent because you had a nice speaker system. And then you invited each person to come up and speak as they were moved to do. And I loved what people shared. And while we were not a huge number of people, I noticed that everybody was videotaping it. And then later I realized, oh, you're videotaping it so you can show the people in Sudan that you haven't been forgotten. We still love you and hold you in our hearts and have candlelight vigils for you.
Yeah, we've been doing, because this is the only like a power we have as a human, social media, that from your phone, you could make a video and post it later, or you could get a live stream from your Facebook account and just will go massively around the world, and everybody could watch, they could share, they could comment into it, or they could, you know, they could like, you know. And it's really amazing. The people in whole entire refugee camps will have like thousands and thousands of people. They will have like a couple of people having like a smartphone, like two people in the whole entire refugee camps. So they have to bring like a car battery, and they will rent it, and they will bring it, and they will charge it there. And this person will try to kind of hook it up in their like flood screen. They have like, they will have only one flood screen TV. And they will hook it up in the TV, and then like you will have hundreds of people watching. So, and that is really mean a lot to them, that when they see that people is still fighting for them, and people are trying to kind of, because there they are like, they are not able to speak out, and they are not, even though they're speaking, there is no one hearing them because they don't have the tools. But here when we speak, so they get empowered, and also they have the hope, even though we have a long distance, but it's still people working toward to the peace and justice and safety and security. So they will be with us at the same track.
Giving people hope who are living in a desperate situation is an act of kindness and love.
Yes.
What kinds of things do people say when they see your candlelight vigil on Instagram or live streamed on Facebook?
I think immediately when we finish and we come back home, it's like that all night. And the second day, they just people calling from all different states around the world. They want like to have that candlelight vigil in their own areas. And they want to know like the escape or process. What I need to do, we want to do the same here. what kind of strategy, how you strategize this, how you do it, how you start the process until you make it. And then I'm just kind of calling them and telling them or send them information. And I feel like I could do more. I could do more, because if this is will make people move forward, or people, they will think like this is the right way, so we could move this and just make more candlelight vigil, and people will come from different areas and learn from Sudan.
Well, maybe you've started something really powerful, El Fadl, with it's simple, but getting people together for vigils to educate themselves, to educate others, to send some love, to give some hope, and let them know they're not forgotten people, while we're asking governments to make sure these people are protected during COVID and the famines that are likely to follow.
Yeah, it's basically education, and then at the same time, call to action to make a difference to the ground.
That's it, exactly. And you've got people all over the world. The diaspora of South Sudanese people is profound, and probably North Sudanese people too.
Yeah.
You're all over the world, and you're very activated people. I was so impressed.
Think about, like, if anybody have a body, like party, whether birthday party or wedding, or you have graduation, or anybody passed away, you by yourself, you cannot do it. But we have to do it collectively. Mm-hmm. Ideas could come as individual, but the work has to be done as a group, collectively. And this is what I believe we the people have the power to do anything.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is El Fadl Arbab. He's been a guest on my show before, and you can hear his interviews on the show's archives at newmainersspeak.com/archives. He's had lived experiences that sound more like someone describing an action movie than something you can imagine as a real life, but El Fadl has been through so much, and yet he's always loving and grateful. El Fadl, I understand that you returned from a long visit back to Sudan recently. I wondered if you could tell us about that. How were you able to travel with the travel bans and COVID and other challenges?
Yeah, you know, I've been back to Sudan after 24 years. I never been back to my region, Darfur.
24 years?
24 years, yep.
Wow.
I never been back since I get out from there, just like running and struggling and escaping until I come to Egypt, and then I come to United States, and then I went back in, it was in December, last December. I went back, and it was very difficult, and it was very different, because there, like, I want to go to Darfur, and Darfur, all the militias, where they call it Janjaweed, or they call it Damasari, or even the government officials, they are all working together just to harm us as people of Darfur. I go to Darfur, I visit 20 different towns, and I went to 50 refugee camps. But the way how you going to, there is no like road, like pavement, but it's like, it's just dirt road. I see the life there is not changed to the better at all. It's even become more worse. People are not able to get drinking water. People are not able to get their food to farm. People are not able to get out of the refugee camp. Like, you feel like you are in jail. When the women and girls, they go out of refugee camps to bring water or collect firewood or bring food from the farm, they get raped. And if the men, they go out to bring anything, they get killed. And that makes everything difficult. And the humanitarian organization, they were in Sudan, they're being spilled out or they're being kicked out from Sudan, because the government of Sudan, their mentality, like, okay, we don't want to kill these people, but we want to starve them. They will get sick and they just die, because we are on the international watch list. So any crime that they commit or anybody who's being killed, then we have our people on the ground, so they will report it to us and we will give it to the international organization and international community, and that whatever the number will be adding on top to what we already have. And they don't want that. So they have different tactics to kill, like different genocide through starvation, through bringing, like, the, sometimes they poison the food and they will bring it to the refugee camp. When the people eat, they get sick and die. Or they poison the water, or they poison like oil where the people eat. So they do all these crazy stuff within different ways. And that is like people just, they are just there and suddenly they just disappear. And I go to different refugee camps. I have to go, like, you know, I have to wear like them and I have to do everything like them, because you don't want to look different there. Because when you do, then you would be on target to the government of Sudan and to the militia.
So are you an American now?
Oh yeah, American citizen since 2009.
Okay, yeah, so you go as an American citizen, but you have to blend in so that you're not a target.
Yes.
I see. So what happened in terms of COVID-19? How did you get out of Sudan?
When I finished my trip, I was coming back to Khartoum, and then the COVID-19. An American embassy is like, they sent us a message, and it's like, hey, you better get out of here. And I was like, how come? I have 2 months left. And they are like, no, you have to get out of here, because first of all, Sudan is not going to be safe. And also the COVID-19, the first week of May, that will hit Sudan so badly. And then they are like, they bring private plane and they pick people from Addis Ababa, which one is in Ethiopia, and they go to South Sudan. And then they come to North Sudan, which is Khartoum Airport. They pick us up, and then we go to N'Djamena, pick up some American citizens. We go to Togo, and then we continue coming to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Everybody is like, how you got here? Like, that was like the whole entire world was like shut down. No airport. Like, even we were in Sudan, like, you would be wondering to hear plane sound. Like, it's look like when you hear plane sound, everybody's like hearing, yeah, it's like amazing. So, and just to experience that also add on me to see how much American people care about their own citizen. And that to bring you back home with private jet or private plane, and you will be able to eat and drink until you will come get home. That is really mean a lot to me.
Yeah, that's really profound. They scooped you up, got you out of there, and got you home. I'm so glad you're safe. I wanted to follow up with you about something, if I might. Did you ever finish your high school diploma? You were working on that last time we spoke.
I did not get the high school diploma yet, but I'm working right now to get my career as a truck driver, CDL, 18-wheelers. So in these months when the schools open, I have like 80 hours left, so I could go and get the 80 hours finish and then get my certificate and then get my license, and I will work on my career. I will have more opportunity when I work my own, like I have my own career, then I will pick up my school hours to finish my GED and then go to the college, study human rights and conflict resolution.
Wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep on trucking. That's really terrific.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind? Do you want to do long haul trucking?
Yeah, I like to go across the states because I love traveling, and I like to see different states. And it's like I like driving a lot because there is something to do with a driver, because I love driving since when I was in Darfur. My area is being attacked, and I go to capital of Sudan researching for my parents and my sibling. And then I heard there, my mom, she's alive, she's at the refugee camp in Darfur. And we were coming back to Darfur, it wasn't safe, but I made it my way back. And there is a car where we were kind of riding on, like lorries, was like convoy, like 10 cars. And then we get to the middle of the valley, and the first car is being attacked, and the last car is being attacked. And the cars in the middle, they are like, we are not giving up. If we give up, so these militia will come and kill us, and they will take what they want to take, and they will burn whatever is left over. So these drivers, they split the half. One run in the right side, and one run on the left side. So we end up going to the right side. And this driver, he was like, he take his head out and it's like, guy, stay tight. And you guys, if anybody fall, I'm not stopping, I'm just going, because those guys will come behind us. So this driver keep driving and jumping on the hoop until we get to the second town. And that driver saved our life. And from there, my dream was like, I want to become a driver. I want to become a driver. When I come and I take my driver's license in the state of Maine, I was like, okay, this is what I want now. And now even I'm thinking about something bigger, because like when you have these 18-wheelers, like if you go work with any humanitarian organization anywhere around the world, bring them the food, bring them the medicine, bring them like the water for them, that is really a big help. And this is what something I want to do around the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
When I'm with you, I often get a little bit weepy.
Yeah.
Because you are so attached to your values, and you really act from them. When I watched you setting up the American flag and the South Sudanese flag at the vigil the other day, mm-hmm. I realized you were doing it with such care and intention, and just watching you was like a prayer. And
thank you.
I thought, you know, it's how we do what we do, not always just what we do. The way you do it is with such love and respect, and the way you would drive a truck is with love.
Yeah, because it's something, it's like always within your body, it's in your blood, it's right there. And it's always, when you're talking, it's like, it's from your heart. It's not like something you're trying to bring it out, but something is always there. It's been there for a long time. And also when you come to the humanity, when we think about the human, like all around the world, like we are all the same as human at the end of the day. So for me, it's just as human to be there. And anywhere around the world that they need help, so I could go there and help. If that, whatever I do, that will help those people, and definitely I would be going anywhere to help.
Yep, and they really do need truck drivers for these convoys, yes, that deliver to scary places. And you're, yeah, courageous enough to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an amazing that I see a lot of truck drivers, they are like driving this medicine and food and water to these refugee camps around the world. And you will see they will be putting like a white flag in front.
A white flag.
That means I'm peacefully guy. Look, I'm just a driver. I'm holding things to the people at the refugee camp. So it's like they are just the way how they do things is really very peacefully way. And I want to be one of those drivers.
You would know just what to do if you ran into trouble because you've got the most street smarts of anyone I've ever met.
Thank you.
You're the only guy I know that knows what to do if you come across a lion. You could probably find water in the desert too, couldn't you?
And also, like, you know, like when you struggle and you went through the difficulties, it's so much easier. You could find any challenges or any obstacle and you will get away from it by just being positive and just talking to them to just to get communicate. So, and that's like, for me, it's a very simple thing to do. It's like natural. So, you know, yeah, I want to be part of those guys, you know, just to just make a difference.
You're going to be great at that. And I will be honored to know you doing that work.
Thank you.
You're remarkably kind and thoughtful, El Fadl. I wish you the very best as you get your driver's license for driving a truck so that you can move on to this career of being someone who delivers humanitarian aid to people in need. It's just the most perfect career for you. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me. And also, I want to say to everyone who's watching this amazing show is bring the education to our local communities and also to the broader community as well, because it's really amazing to have these new mainers into the show and just sharing their story. It's just amazing. We really appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, El Fadl. I am so happy to get to meet you and know you. And I hope that when you come back from your career of delivering humanitarian aid, you'll run for a political office, because you really are quite remarkable at knowing how to take care of other people. And we would be lucky to have you as a leader here as well.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
Thank you all for listening. And if you'd like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with El Fadl's song that he selected for us. Can you tell us why you picked this Bob Marley song?
Yeah, it's all about like sacrifice. And when we think about all these great nations, that is not just something fall from the sky. There is people work for it. They sacrifice. They put a lot of their time and money, and people die for it, like 4th of July. When we come to the 4th of July and we are all get happy and eat and drink and go watch fireworks, that is mean there is people work for it. And when we think about it, just to think about the state of Maine, here in the state of Maine, we have this vacation land that people coming from all over the world. They just having good time here. They go to all these oceans. They having good time and tour around. And they having all this good time. There is our elders, they work for this. And we just continuing to keep it like alive. And we have to work hard to keep it. Otherwise, if we did not work it hard to keep it as they give it to us, then this thing will be over. And we want to be part of that leadership and part of that change and part of that hardworking people, just to work hard and make it happen and make it better to the generations to come and see, and also educate them. They will take it over from there with their own unique way, and they will make a difference.
Thank you so much. Bob Marley.
Thank you.
Get up, stand up for your right.